Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And good morning. I'm Phil Vacchio.
And this is the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Show, where we talk about all things estate planning, Medicaid planning, you know, state administration, whatever's on your mind. You can give us a call. It's 518-476-5900, and we'd be happy to talk to you. So good morning, Phil. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Jane Marie. How about yourself?
All right. Pretty good.
Yeah. How's the 2 months into the new year already? How's everything been?
It's been hectic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think we really have a slow time of year, do we?
No, I don't think so.
Well, you know, that's good, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The type of work we do, people need help all year round.
And you're always there. That's the big thing.
That's right.
That's right. That's why you're busy. You're always there.
We're always there.
Which is great, yep.
Yeah, wintertime seems to be extra busy sometimes between people getting the incentive to get their estate plan in order, people getting sick because it's cold. So I don't know if it's busier in the winter, but...
Sometimes it feels a little bit busier, but yeah. Sometimes that's when people visit their families over the holidays and then
that's true.
Get them to do some planning afterwards. Right.
Or get sick, like my house has been for the past month and a half.
Just, you know, it's that time of year, Phil, you know.
Oh, John, constant sickness.
From one person to another.
It's just incredible.
It really is.
Yeah, poor Phil, he's been sick so much. That's with little kids. They bring home everything.
They do from school and wherever they've been, yeah.
Little Petri dishes.
Yes. But it's all part of the game, having the little kids. It's still great.
Old parents go through it. That's what I tell myself. Yep. I'm not alone in this.
No, you're not.
You'll miss them someday.
You will miss it when it's,
Yes, you'll miss that point.
Yeah.
They're still cute and cuddly a little, right? Mm-hmm.
For now, yeah.
For now.
No, they're really good kids. I'm lucky.
So. They still think you're great, right?
They do. We'll see how long that lasts.
So that's the best thing. Someday that'll go away.
Yeah.
So your wife's, she had off this week, right?
She does. She got to spend her week home with the kids. So
she's probably thrilled to go back on Monday.
Yeah, right.
Oh, that's right. Spring break was last word this past week, right?
Or what's this one called? Is this winter break?
Oh, winter break. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm thinking spring. I'm being positive, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Winter break, yes. Oh, my gosh. My gosh.
What's funny about winter break is then, like, a month and a half later, you have spring break.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very, I don't know why they do at the end of winter, but.
They're very close together.
Well, especially this year, I know, because the spring break falls extra early, I believe, this year.
I think because Easter is so early this year.
Easter is early. Yeah, the end of March.
Yeah, very early.
Last Sunday in March, that's pretty early.
That's right.
May not be too warm. I like Easter better when it's warm, don't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Later on in April.
Right.
You know, it just seems like that's the right time for it, but hey, we can't control that.
Easter with snow on the ground is not fun.
No.
Can't wear your...
Easter means spring.
Can't wear your pretty spring dresses.
Yeah. You can. Right. This might not look proper. Yeah.
Do you have a pretty spring dress, John, tomorrow?
Well, not anymore. No.
Saving it up all year.
That's great. Anyway, we're getting silly here.
We're getting silly. Elder law. So there was... Yeah. It's interesting. It was kind of late this year. So every year they update the numbers, the finances, financial levels of income and assets that you're allowed to have. And we're already almost the end of February when they announced it.
Yeah, right. Almost 2 months into the year before they announced the 2024 numbers.
And do you have those, Phil? What do they?
I do. The numbers we're talking about are for Medicaid eligibility, well, at least in our world, there's a lot of different poverty level numbers that the government releases. But in our world, we're referring to the numbers for long-term care Medicaid eligibility, right? So we have two different eligibility prongs, income and resources. So from 2024, the income resource test went up to... I'm sorry, resources we'll do first. Resources went up to $31,175 for a single individual on Medicaid. And if it's a couple, it went up to $42,312. So what is it up about? It's only a few hundred dollars this year, which is that's the norm.
Yeah, normally mm-hmm. it's only a little bit each year. It's not going to be that big jump like we had.
Yeah, last year was was an anomaly. It almost doubled, but right. usually it's a couple $100 or so. And the income test went up for community Medicaid to $1,732. That was up from $1,677 for 2023.
Not a huge jump
no,
there.
Right? No, not a big jump. And then the last figure, if you are a well spouse, so if there's one spouse sick and one spouse on Medicaid, the well spouse's income, allowable income, went up to $3,853.50 a month. So,
okay, not bad.
No, yeah. not, it's, well, you know, depending on where you live, if you right. can live off
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah, very true.
But so that number refers to if the well spouse in that scenario has less than that amount of income, they'll be allowed to keep a portion of the sick spouse's income to bring them up to that number okay. to help mm-hmm. them live, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. That's right. So let's break this down a little bit. So let's say you're applying for community Medicaid, right? And you're at home and you're married. So how much income could you keep?
For the individual who's sick, it's 1,000, the number I just gave.
Yeah, $1,732.
Yep.
And then your spouse can have
up to $3,853.50.
I should have done that math in my head before I asked the question.
That's
but,
okay.
But that's like over $5,000.
Yeah, combined.
Combined a that's month. A that, month. Yeah, that okay. you can keep. So a lot of people come in and they say, well, I make too much money to qualify for Medicaid, right? That's yeah, a lot of things yeah. I hear initially.
Yeah, I bet you do.
And they, and then, well, no, let's get into it. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
And I'll just say $5,000 because I didn't do the math, right?
Close enough.
$5,000 a month. I mean, that's what you could have and qualify for Medicaid as at home.
Yeah.
So that's not bad. I mean,
mm-hmm. that's not bad. And then, you know, that number consists of a few different things. When you're talking about income, mm-hmm. People sometimes just think of their monthly income from Social Security or their pension.
Right.
It also includes any distributions that they may be entitled to from retirement accounts as well. So, mm-hmm. right, if they have an IRA or a 401k or a 403b or whatever number you want to throw out there, mm-hmm. and it's a retirement account, the government makes you take distributions from that. There's a life expectancy table. So that'll count as part of that number too, but still somewhat of a high number.
Right.
What if you are over that number? Is there anything our clients can do to still qualify and protect some of that income if they're over?
Hmm.
Yes, definitely. So that what you can do is for the person applying for Medicaid, if they're over that number, they can use a trust for their extra income. So if I make $2,700 a month, right, and the allowance is $1,700, I have an extra $1,000. That's income per month. That's called my spend down amount.
Okay.
So that doesn't mean I don't qualify for Medicaid. It means that if I take that spend down, that $1,000, and put it in a pooled income trust, I qualify for Medicaid.
I see. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, we get that all the time.
You take that difference.
Mm-hmm. You take that difference.
Okay.
But I don't lose access to those funds. Once it goes to that trust, mm-hmm. I can then have the trust pay some of my living expenses.
Yeah, a lot of people assume that they make more, so they just can't qualify.
Right.
But it's usually that you can't qualify. It might be that you have to contribute more depending on the kind of Medicaid you're on. But like Jim Marie's saying, with community Medicaid is kind of what we're talking about right now. I'm living in my home still or in an apartment or some kind of independent living community, and I have aides, medical aides coming to care for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Community Medicaid will pay for that care, and these are the limits that we're talking about right now.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if I make too much, quote-unquote, too much, I'm over that $1,732 a month, mm-hmm. I don't have to lose the amount over to Medicaid. I can create that pool trust account with a company
right.
that will manage it for me. So if I'm $1,000 a month over, every month I contribute $1,000 to that pool trust company.
Mm-hmm.
They put it into this sub-trust account in my name as the sick individual, and then I can submit my bills to them. So if I have rent bills or property taxes or credit card bills because I put my food and my clothes on my credit card or whatever your bills may be, they can still be paid for from that excess income, which is a great benefit instead of losing that money.
Yeah, that is great.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Right. So with that availability, you really can't make too much income to qualify.
Yeah. The only time you make too much income is if you literally cannot spend it all.
True.
Plus privately pay for your care. If I'm making $20,000 a month.
Right.
Maybe that's too much.
Right.
Maybe that's not
okay,
going to make
yeah,
sense.
Yeah.
If you were making that much per month, I would hope you could pay for your own care.
Hopefully. But yeah, right. It has to be a very, very high number
to
qualify for Medicaid.
And the reason that is important, because in that pooled trust, you can spend it during your lifetime. But if you haven't spent all the money in that trust by the time you die, that money stays with the trust and goes back to the trust.
Yeah, it's not a fund that you want to let accumulate. Mm-hmm. So you want to try to spend it as you deposit the money into there, because you don't know when you're going to pass away.
Right.
If you're saying to yourself, well, we'll save that money up in the account, and when our property taxes come due for the year, we'll pay that big chunk at that point. But if the person passes away before that comes due, that money's not going to be available anymore. It's not going to come back to you. So you want to spend it on like the
your
normal
monthly day-to-day expenses. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And most people, we all have expenses. We can find things to spend it on. You know, your heating oil, your electric, your groceries, everything.
No, utilities alone.
Utilities alone.
And they keep going up.
It's expensive to live nowadays in general.
It sure is.
But we can also get creative. There's a lot of things we can do. Some of the companies that we work with that manage the pool trusts are very helpful too in figuring out ways to spend the money if it's really that difficult to figure that out.
Right.
I have no problem spending money.
So
well,
I don't either.
Kids, of course, right?
Seems to be pretty easy to me. So that's a great benefit. I mean, there's that same. So we're talking about Medicaid here, right? Mm-hmm. Community Medicaid. There's also chronic care Medicaid. So if I'm in a facility, if I'm in a nursing home, does that same income limit apply to nursing home Medicaid?
Oh, not for the person applying for Medicaid.
Right.
So we can do a lot of creative planning if it's community Medicaid. If you're the person in the nursing home, there's nothing we can really do with your income.
All of
your income needs to go to the nursing home except for $50 per month.
Right.
Now, if you're married and you have a spouse, they do look at her income. And if her income is below that $3,800 per month,
right,
she can keep some of your income to get up to that. Sorry, I just realized assume the man is in the nursing home and the wife's not. Sorry, that's just my bias in my head. But
yeah.
Okay.
You women live longer than us.
Okay, good.
That's right.
That's how it works, I think.
So if she's at home, right, she could take some of his income to get to $3,800. But if she already has $3,800 per month of income, then all of his income has to go to the nursing home.
Right. We may be out of luck. I mean, sometimes we can try hardship routes if the monthly expenses at home are so much that she in this example, can't afford it. But typically you have to contribute that income first to the nursing home, and then Medicaid picks up the rest of the bill.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. But bottom line is, this is something you should really think about ahead of time if you can.
Yeah.
Make those plans, and this is where you guys come in.
Yeah, so everything we spoke about, the numbers so far today, that applies to what you're allowed to have. Those look-back periods that we speak about from time to time, those haven't changed for this year, right?
Right, that hasn't changed. It's still 5 years for a nursing home. A lot of people come in and think it's 7 years. It's not.
Yeah.
It hasn't.
Yeah, I don't know who got together and decided 7 years was the...
I don't know where people hear
everyone
that.
Everyone has that same number in their mind.
Magic number is 7.
I don't know
they
where
are hearing that
from.
Somewhere, but it's not true. It's 5 years.
Right.
And the community Medicaid, although we've been talking about this for...
Ever.
Forever, that it's going to change to a 2.5-year look back. It hasn't happened yet.
Right.
It's supposed to happen April 1st, but it's not likely going to
I'd
happen.
I'd be very surprised at this point. They haven't started rolling it out. But formally, it's still slated for April 1st.
Right.
What that means is that after April 1st, if I apply for community Medicaid, there's a 2.5-year look back. So up till now, we've always been able to just transfer a bunch of assets wherever we want to transfer them to and get them at the person below the Medicaid limit and qualify. Once that 2.5-year look back goes into place, it won't be as easy as that. There'll be some other hoops and timelines you might have to jump through.
All right. And we'll be right back after this break.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, Saratoga Springs, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Phil, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us in Albany or Saratoga offices, call 518-465-7581 or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I'm Jay Marie Schaefer.
And I'm Phil Vacchio.
And this is the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Show. We've been talking a bit about community Medicaid, how you qualify, what your income and assets are. If you have any questions, you know, please give us a call. It's 518-476-5900. Maybe you want to know how these new numbers affect you. Or it doesn't have to be about this. It could be a question about wills, trust, powers of attorney. We're here to help you.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah, so I'll reiterate those numbers for those who are joining us after the break. So for Medicaid eligibility, the numbers for income and resources have both gone up. The income limit for an individual is now $1,732 a month, and that is for community Medicaid. If I'm living in my home and I need aides to come care for me, that's the limit, my income limit I'm allowed to have. But as we were speaking about before, if I'm over that limit, there are ways I can protect my excess or surplus income. And then the resource limit is $31,175 for an individual and $42,312 if you are a married couple and both on Medicaid. So those are the new figures. They've gone up slightly since last year. We talked a little bit about income before the break, but let's talk about that resource test a little bit, Jay Marie. So that resource test, again, for an individual, $31,175. Does that apply to just community Medicaid or also nursing home Medicaid, or are there different numbers between the two?
So that number applies to both, right, community Medicaid or nursing home Medicaid. Mm-hmm. But if you're married, you know, you got to have a little more, right?
Yeah, it's not double.
It's not double.
Double it, but they get you a little more.
It's I don't know why it's not double. But
I don't either. I never knew that, but
right.
So be it.
So be it.
Yeah.
But so many people are probably saying, oh, $31,000, I have more than that in my investment account, right?
Yeah.
So there are some assets that are exempt and then that don't count towards that dollar amount.
Right. Yes.
And what are some of those assets that don't count?
So there are a few assets that don't count toward that figure, one being assets in retirement accounts, so pre-tax retirement accounts. So basically all retirement accounts other than what we call Roth accounts, accounts that we fund with money before taxes are paid. So those accounts, if I have $1 million in an IRA, that's that $1 million is not going to count toward the $31,000 or so I'm allowed to have. Mm-hmm. The caveat there is they will force me to take distributions monthly according to my life expectancy, which will count as income. Mm-hmm. And we talked about having to contribute your income if you're in a nursing home. Right. But the actual principal won't count.
Sure. Right. And we'll get back to that concept
right,
in
we have
a minute.
Call. Caller.
And we have a call.
Yeah, Sue from Amsterdam. Good morning, Sue.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hi, I have a question about I-bonds. Okay. Can they be included in a trust?
So I believe if you have the I-bonds already and you want to transfer them to a trust, you would have to liquidate it, right?
If it's mature already.
Right. So
really? They're not mature.
Mm-hmm. If they're not mature yet, there may be a way to transfer them to the trust. Are they they're physical bonds or are they book bonds, like electronic?
I believe I have the actual certificate. Mm-hmm. They're actually from 2001, mm-hmm. and they have until, I think, 2030.
Mm-hmm. So if that's the case and they're not mature yet, there may be a way through treasurydirect.com. They'll have to be reissued in, they don't think they give out the hard copy anymore, mm-hmm. so it'll become like what they call a book share. right. an electronic version of the bond, but we can retitle them into the trust if they haven't matured yet. If they have matured yet, then Jamie was saying the only option is to liquidate them and put them into some other kind of account in the trust. But if they haven't, there is a way to transfer ownership. We have Medicaid and estate planning paralegals at our office that do that kind of stuff quite often. It's just a matter of filling out the proper forms, though.
Mm-hmm.
So that is possible. Do you have a trust in effect already?
Yes.
Okay. So that is something that you could consider. We'd have to take a look at the bonds and discuss what kind of trust it is and the purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But it is definitely part of a discussion we could have, depending on your goals.
Sounds pretty complicated.
Everything sounds complicated.
Well,
but
you used to be able to bring your bonds into your local bank,
yeah.
do anything with them, and then they stopped that, and they want to do everything through Treasury Direct online.
Yeah.
That makes it a little bit hard,
Yeah, you have to actually mail the bonds and whatnot, so it does get a little more difficult than just walking into a bank.
Right.
But it is possible.
Yeah, we can help you with those forms online if you, you know, want to give our office a call.
I would need help.
Okay, sure.
Okay, well, I'll think about it and possibly, we haven't been in actually to see you in quite a while.
Yeah, we always, as you know, recommend coming in every once in a while just to check up, see if everything is good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We'll pull your file, discuss it together, discuss your current life situation. It's good to have these discussions every 5 years or so, or if your life has changed. So feel free to take advantage of that.
Yep.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling.
All right. Thank you, Sue. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right.
Yeah, so lots of different kind of assets we could put into trusts, right, Jamie?
Yeah, you can put bonds into a trust, you know, all kinds of things. I mean, most people put their house. I mean, that's the majority of what our clients put into the trust. But if you have other assets, and we were kind of getting into this, you know, what's exempt, what's not exempt. You know,
In the trust world, you only want to fund the trust with non-exempt assets.
That's right.
If it's exempt, it already has some protection. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about IRA accounts, retirement type accounts. Those are exempt with the small condition that you have to take distributions as income. Also, a house, one primary residence is an exempt asset.
Mm-hmm.
Whether I'm living there, I still have a spouse living there. They don't count that toward eligibility limits. Do you know what that figure is now? Is it like up to like $950,000 or so of a value?
I think so. Yeah.
It's a high value.
I don't exactly know the number, but it's very high. So
I don't think I've ever had a situation where it wasn't. If it's a multi-million-dollar house, I guess they would try to count it as a resource, but that's not
kind of different.
Yeah, it's a little different scenario. So the house doesn't count, even if I'm the only one in that house. So say I'm in that house, I'm not married or my spouse has predeceased me, and I'm in a nursing home, they still won't count the house as an asset if we say that you have what's called an intent to return home.
That's right.
And it's a subjective intent. I mean, they don't really question us on it. If it's a miracle and I get better, yes, I intend to return to my home and live there. So what they do in that situation, what Medicaid does, is they say, okay, well, the value of that house is not going to count towards your Medicaid resource limit. But if you don't return home, we're going to put a lien against it.
That's right.
Right. So it's protected in a sense.
Like sort of protected. So if you haven't really done any planning and you need to get Medicaid quickly, we could apply with the house in your name. But really what we want to do is protect you against that Medicaid lien. So we want to get the house out of your name.
Yeah.
As far in advance as possible.
Yeah, ideal scenario, we're able to protect 100% and avoid a lien, but that typically involves advanced planning with the 5-year look back for nursing home Medicaid, or if there's one of the few transfer exemptions, if you have a wife, we're using the female
wife
as the person.
The
here.
Husband always goes in first. Sorry, guys. Yeah.
But if you have a well spouse, we could transfer it to just the well spouse. There's an exemption that we like to use that does come up more often than I may have originally assumed, that child caregiver exemption. What is that one, Jay Marie?
Yeah, that happens a lot these days. So that's where, you know, a parent is not doing well and needs help, and one of their children moves in to help take care of them. And, you know, I think we see that a lot because, you know, family members want to help, right? Maybe they can't find other good help out there, right?
Yeah.
And so they're going to move in, take care of their parents. If you do that for at least 2 years, then your parent can transfer the house to you.
Yeah.
It's a caregiver child exemption.
And it's not that long of a period. I've had cases where the kids kind of see the writing on the wall. Mm-hmm. And obviously not everyone could just move back in with their parents.
Yes, that's right.
Some of us have families of our own and kids mm-hmm. we're raising, and you don't have mm-hmm. that ability right, to yeah. do so.
Right.
But if you do and you move back in and you help provide, you know, quote unquote, caregiver services for your parents,
mm-hmm.
and that could be things like helping them with the shopping, taking them to medical appointments, helping right. with the cooking and cleaning, mm-hmm. those activities of daily life. The government's theory is that you as the child, by doing so, are keeping the person out of the right. nursing home for a longer period of time, because mm-hmm. without that child's help, they would have went into a nursing home facility sooner. And the government, if Medicaid was in the picture, would have had to start paying
yes.
sooner.
So it's saving the government money by the child moving in and taking care of the parents.
Yeah, so I guess it's like a reward for once. Mm-hmm. The government gives a reward for something like that.
Right.
But we can transfer that property to that child caregiver outright, mm-hmm. even with the five-year look back, and protect 100% of it, which is mm-hmm. fantastic. Now, what that doesn't account for is if there's other kids, we're
yes,
transferring
that happens
it
a lot,
to
right?
one child, and the other kids say, ho, what about mm-hmm. me? Where's mm-hmm. where's my share? And, well, you know, unfortunately, they're going to have to trust that the one child kind of shares in the
yeah.
profit when the day comes.
I've seen it go different ways. I've
yeah.
seen it go where maybe that child's been living there for a long time, and the family's like, okay, you deserve it. You know, you get the house, and maybe there's some other assets to go to the other children.
Yeah.
Or I've seen it the way you said, where, you know, the other kids say, you shouldn't get the whole thing. You need to sell it and split it with us, right?
Yeah. So. But it doesn't always work that way. I mean, that is one thing we can do if one of those exemptions don't apply, is sell the house
mm-hmm.
and engage in crisis planning, we call it, to protect about half the money from the sale. I'm not going to get into that today. That's pretty complicated.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a bunch of things we can do. Back to exempt resources.
Right.
We talked about the house. We talked about retirement accounts. Any that you can think of, Jay Marie?
So, your car is exempt. So sometimes
yep.
People joke that they can go buy an expensive car. But, I mean, don't go crazy. But if you need a new car, you know.
Yeah.
Why not buy it?
Don't push the envelope and
push the envelope, right.
Buy that Aston Martin
right,
Lamborghini.
Right.
But a reasonable car would be fine.
True. And then another thing that it's very practical, it's not like fun to do, but you can go do a prepaid funeral. And
yeah.
funerals are pretty expensive. So that's, mm-hmm. you know, if you have to pay for that, you're protecting that amount of money. Now that's already paid for, so your kids don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Have I told you my extreme funeral example? I think I may have.
I don't know. How much?
So
extreme, huh?
Extreme.
Yeah, this is a pretty
yeah.
extreme case.
Right.
It was rare. So the woman who was in the nursing home was about $150,000 over the Medicaid limit.
Right.
And with that prepaid funeral agreement, you can actually do it for yourself. You could pay your
right.
own funeral. You can pay funerals for children.
Right.
And the spouses of children, actually.
Right.
So she had, I forget if it was four or five kids. They were all married. And this woman bought all of them funerals.
Oh, my gosh.
So we spent about $150,000 on funerals.
We're
just throwing out funerals left
yeah,
and right.
Yeah.
Everybody
right.
gets a funeral.
Yeah.
But we were able to protect, if you look
all
at it that
money.
Way.
Right, of course.
Instead of going to the nursing home, that money went to pay for everyone's
sure.
funerals.
Yeah.
Right.
It sounds funny, but it's a great idea.
It's
yeah.
a great idea. And
it
the funeral home
yeah.
must have been really happy.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they
oh,
were
yeah.
ecstatic.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
right.
Slam dunk.
That's right.
Yeah, so there are things that you can do. You can also make improvements to your home.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to be planning for community Medicaid and you need to adapt the home so you can stay there, you could put in a ramp. You could change the bathroom around. Those are all kind of exempt transfers or a way to spend down your funds.
Yeah, the government views it as you improving your living situation because of your needs. Or if you're living with one of your kids, you can make improvements mm-hmm. to their house for your
True.
For your needs. You
can do the in-law apartment.
Yeah, spend a lot of money on that very
That's
quickly.
Right. Well, the time has gone fast. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you would like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581 or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.